Muscle Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrivagus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. We are here to do chapter 4 of Prisoner of Azkaban.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Yeah, and I'm your host Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And yeah, chapter 4. I think I usually say chapter 4 in the chapter title after we introduce ourselves.
You made a long pause and you looked at me, so I figured I was going to jump in.
No, I felt confused. All right, okay. Whatever. Clearly, we're just learning how to do this now, 4 chapters into the 3rd book. But for our listeners, we always start with a chapter summary done in 30 seconds or less. This week, it is Joe's turn. I'm very interested to see what he does with it because... a lot happens in this chapter, but also nothing happens in this chapter. So I am going to get my timer going and I will hit it when he starts.
Harry lives in the Leaky Cauldron for the rest of the summer and he loves it. He has freedom. He does his homework in public, gets free ice cream every half hour. He does his school shopping early, gets to see some of his friends and spends his last day with Ron and Hermione. Ron's rat looks sick, so he gets a tonic for it, while Hermione buys a pet cat named Crookshanks. The night ends with Harry overhearing Mr. and Mrs. Weasley talking about how Sirius Black wants to kill Harry, but Fudge doesn't want him to know.
Nice. That was like 26 seconds, factoring in my human error of like tapping it on the correct time. Yeah, like 26 seconds. That's good. This is going to be a weird one because like there are events, but most of my notes are just like the random things that pop up in Diagon Alley because we get a lot of like world building, I think, in this chapter. We get a lot of like new magical objects and new people who are introduced, but not a lot of like plot events.
We get some plot at the end, yeah. And then we have like an epiphany from Harry where J.K. Rowling explains everything again to make sure you understood what happened.
Right. Yeah. So this is going to be kind of a weird one, I guess. Not to hype the episode up before we start. But basically, my notes start off with like a quarter of a page just about some of the cool little things that are mentioned throughout Diagon Alley. I'm going to run through them all real quick. Hopefully they're interesting to you. The first one is Harry overhears some wizards arguing about transfiguration today, which is a scholarly journal about, you guessed it, transfiguration. I did find some details about it on Pottermore, though. Apparently, McGonagall was awarded Transfiguration Today's Most Promising Newcomer Award while she was at Hogwarts. It seems like something that is awarded to like a senior at Hogwarts.
Okay.
But to my knowledge, McGonagall is the only known recipient, so I don't have a lot to go off of.
I mean,
there.
They knew no one could top her, and they just stopped giving them out.
Yeah, but there were humans that lived before McGonagall. And
she was the reason she inspired not only the award, but the magazine itself, and then they stopped giving out the award.
Okay, so McGonagall did receive their award, and later, while she was a Hogwarts professor, she would go on to correct articles for the publication in her free time. It's listed as a hobby.
Do you think she just like marked them up or do you think she like sent back letters?
I imagine it was part of the like peer review process that you get with scholarly journals. She was probably one of their go-to like peer reviewers.
Okay, that would make more sense than like she clips stuff out. Like
that would be
writes,
fun.
writes on them with red pen and then mails them back of like, fix this next time.
You peer review.
Yeah,
so
before it goes out.
Yeah. But I thought that it was interesting that there are scholarly journals within the magical community because
reassuring, that's for sure.
Yes, we only really hear about like 2 publications in the wizarding world, one of which has not been mentioned yet.
One of which doesn't exist until another book or so.
And the other one, the Daily Prophet, hasn't happened yet, but it starts to call into question whether the Daily Prophet is always accurate and always reporting the truth. So I like the idea that there are other publications from which people could theoretically get knowledge and information because this is pre-internet. Another thing that's mentioned just by some random people on Diagon Alley is a lunoscope, which is an astronomical instrument that shows the phases of the moon. Nothing too important or interesting there, but it will be mentioned in future books. So we'll put a thumbtack in that and put a thumbtack in it, right? What's the expression I'm looking for?
Maybe just a tack. I don't think I've ever heard put a thumbtack in
it. Yeah, put a tack in it. That sounds wrong.
Just make a mental note.
Make a mental note for future
books. Or also...
or forget about it. Yeah. We'll explain what a lunoscope is in, say, 2 books. Another thing that's
mentioned... You have plenty of time to forget.
...is gobstones. Gobstones is a game similar to marbles, but the pieces, which are called gobstones, squirt a liquid at the player when they lose a point.
More importantly, nasty smelling liquid.
Yeah, it
doesn't sound good. And you can buy gold ones. Harry was very tempted to buy gold gobstones.
What do you think the gold ones shoot?
Like, still nasty. Still bad? Yeah, okay. I bet it's the same exact stuff, but like it's just a gold plated one.
And then I'm going to read my notes verbatim here. It's a game for losers. The Wizarding World article basically says that it is a game for losers. I can't get too deep into it because there's some stuff that is relevant to Half-Blood Prince, of all things, about gobstones, but it is not a popular quote-unquote sport. It kind of seems comparable to like a chess club, if that makes sense.
But there is wizard chess already.
There is wizard chess, but I guess like the violence of wizard chess makes it a little bit cooler and more exciting.
I would say the part that makes this for losers is losers get sprayed with nasty smelling liquid. Like, who would willingly... Nobody's like gathering around to watch somebody get sprayed with some nasty smelling liquid every time they lose a single point.
Yeah, I get that. I'm not super familiar with the game of marbles. Is there strategy to playing marbles?
Well, you have a bunch of marbles in a circle.
Yeah.
And then you have a bigger marble, which you flick into the other marbles.
Uh-huh.
Try and knock them out.
Okay, so it's like bowling, kind of, but worse.
Sure. easier to do as a small child in a like on the sidewalk?
My thought process is basically like chess involves strategy. Like you have to be a particular type of person, I think, to be good at chess.
There's
or at
strategy
least
in bowling. Maybe not like...
Oh, definitely. You know I love bowling. I'm not degrading bowling here. But I'm saying that like we've seen Wizards Chess save the day before, basically. Gobstone seems like a couple tiers below wizard chess on the cool meter. The Wizarding World article basically says like it is not a popular hobby at Hogwarts and people sometimes have interest in it, but they tend to outgrow it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just one of many things that Harry decides maybe I shouldn't spend money on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry is basically like just spending his free time walking through Diagon Alley and
he's
like
window
thinking,
shopping.
Yeah. Like got all that money in the bank and then thinking it has to last me another 5 years, which is funny that he's so short sighted of just like, well, I need to keep everything for just the 5 years that I'm in Hogwarts. Like after graduation, whatever, I'll figure it out.
Well, I mean, that's the bare minimum when he's definitely not
sure.
making money. And he's saying like he would have to rely on the Dursleys.
Yeah. So gobstones is for losers is the conclusion that I got from that. And then the biggest thing that Harry wants to spend money on is the Firebolt, which is a new racing broom, supposedly better than the Nimbus 2000 and the Nimbus 2001. He sees it at Quality Quidditch Supply and pretty much lusts after it throughout his entire time in Diagon Alley.
The whole, like, as soon as it shows up, he goes and he just looks at it every day.
Yeah.
And, like, when he meets Seamus and Dean, they, like, they're also...
They all just go look at the Firebolt.
Yeah.
Again, according to WizardingWorld.com, the Firebolt uses goblin-made ironwork for additional stability and power. The post also says, and I want to see how you feel about this, that the Firebolt is made in small quantities because the goblin workers involved in the patented ironwork process are prone to strikes and walkouts at the smallest provocation.
I fully support that.
I support them striking and walking out, too. I don't know. Something about this article seems like condescending on like unions and strikes.
It's rare because the smallest provocation thing. Yeah, it's rare because, you know, they're not crunching. They're not mass producing this. They're doing as much as they want to. As soon as they feel like they're being overworked, they're done.
OK.
And they have that power to say, no, you can't make us work if like you need us.
I think that there's
don't try and push us.
I think that there's an additional layer to this that makes me feel icky of a race. And I think that we can put it as like the goblins are talented crafts people. And so they're the ones that would like produce this highly specialized item. Given the way, though, that goblins are portrayed in these books and it not being so positive and maybe a little racist. I don't like the idea of them being servile to some master to create racing rooms for humans, and the like little bit of shade thrown in about striking being like, oh, any little thing, they'll just strike over it. I don't know.
That I just, mean, I guess it just depends on how you read it. Like, I didn't read what you what
there's
article
a charitable read to it, I'm sure. And I like that you go for that first, and you seem to be optimistic about this world that Rowling is building. Perhaps I've become jaded.
I would say any situation where like they have the power to strike and they're getting what they want, they know we have to keep these goblins happy. Yeah. Or else they stop working. We cannot do this without them. We have to meet all of their whims.
And so theoretically, that is a mark of like some level of empowerment in a capitalist system that like you are
also
a skilled
like such
person.
Such a like recognition of their skill and the need for them.
Yeah. It's not that like the Firebolt company sees that the goblins like value their time and their labor and work conditions. And so they contract out to like developing nation and get their cheap labor to produce the broom. So I get it. I don't know.
That's how you get lesser quality broomsticks.
Yeah. And that's why the Firebolt is so good, that it does have that care put
into
it.
But let's take a look at the description of the Firebolt from the chapter itself.
Sure.
Because this has an acceleration of 0 to 150 miles an hour in 10 seconds.
Is that a lot?
How fast can you go in your car?
You know, actually thinking about I'm thinking about like roller coasters.
They're like fast, like the fastest roller coaster I've been on, of like it shoots you off instead of like you click up the ramp. That one was like 0 to 75 in 6 seconds.
Did I also go on that roller coaster?
Definitely not.
What roller coaster was it?
I think this was in, I don't remember.
Because I'm pretty sure that the Rockin' roller coaster.
You did not go on the Rockin' roller coaster.
I didn't go on the Rockin' roller coaster. I was feeling a little sick that day. The Rockin' roller coaster propels from 0 to 57 miles per hour in 2.8 seconds. So that's a substantial.
But also, I'm telling you right now, you've never gone that fast in a car.
No, no, I've never gone 150 miles per hour in my Subaru or before
like,
that, my
you
Hyundai.
You can feel relatively safe in a car. You're a small child hanging on to a stick in the air going 150 miles an hour. That seems dangerous.
Okay, here's something a little bit more comparable. Kingda Ka, which is the roller coaster we went on in Six Flags, mm-hmm. the one that goes straight up and then straight down, in which I genuinely thought I was going to die.
I went on it like 3 more times than you were.
I did. Yeah. I felt unwell after that roller coaster.
I was so happy to get you on it once.
That one goes from 0 to 128 miles per hour in 3.5 seconds.
So that's definitely a faster acceleration,
so like,
but
imagining,
doesn't get to that speed.
Yeah, imagining holding onto a broomstick and going faster than that.
Yeah.
Albeit in a little bit less time. That's, okay.
Still, 10 seconds is nothing to scoff at.
Yeah, no, totally. That's impressive for a broomstick. Yeah, so the Firebolt is really cool. And
but it also has an unbreakable braking charm. And I'm not sure if that is a very strong charm for, like, braking on a car, or if it's like a charm to prevent it from breaking.
So unbreakable, is that spelled with an E-A?
Yes.
And then breaking, is that spelled B-R-A-K-I-N-G? Yes. So that to me implies that the brakes, like when you press on the brakes in a car, will not break. Like they'll be good forever.
So like a permanent stopping charm.
Like on your car, you have to replace the brakes every now and then. The Firebolt doesn't need that because apparently broomsticks have brakes, I guess.
Well, you have to stop somehow.
I guess.
You can't go to 150 miles an hour and then just not stop.
Okay. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, which I'm referencing from the Harry Potter lexicon, usually I would look it up myself, but I have a master's degree now, which means that my university has revoked my access to library databases, I'm pretty sure. So I can no longer access the Oxford English Dictionary. But the Harry Potter lexicon says that the Oxford English Dictionary says that firebolt is defined as thunderbolt or flash of lightning, which seems fitting for a book about a boy with a lightning bolt on his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we definitely talked a lot about firebolt. Perhaps it will become relevant later in the book.
I mean, it's certainly a cool looking broomstick.
There's certainly
and
a
there's
chapter.
There's no situation where we talk about broomsticks.
Titled Firebolt. So we'll return to the firebolt at some point.
And then because we got into this talking about the things that Harry was avoiding spending money on, the price of this was price on request.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's how you know it is top tier stuff.
I wonder if we ever find out how much they cost. I should look into that for the next time we have to talk about the firebolt. Because, like, Harry is loaded.
The book definitely doesn't tell us.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. I'll look that up for a future episode. Speaking of spending money, a place that Harry doesn't have to spend money is at Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor. Because Florian here is a big fan of Harry and brings him a free ice cream cone every half hour.
So I wasn't sure what direction to look at this. I didn't take it necessarily as he's a big fan of Harry, which that does make sense. But like, it seemed like Harry was talking to him a lot and asking him a lot of questions.
Yeah.
So it could have been a friendly thing. And who knows what.
I think it was a Harry Potter thing.
It was very, very possibly a Harry Potter thing.
Yeah.
But who knows what the minister has also like gone around town.
Interesting.
Saying.
Yeah. If he told Florian like, hey, keep an eye on him, give him a place to hang out. And that way we know he's safe.
Keep him busy.
Yeah. Because Harry goes there and basically hangs out at the ice cream parlor and does
his homework. Yeah.
And Florian helps him out with it because Florian is apparently an expert on witch burnings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have some things to say about that. So J.K. Rowling has made some comments about Florian as a character, but they contain spoilers for Deathly Hallows. So in 10 to 15 years, when we read that book, we can talk about them. But as for Florian Fortescue's name, Florian, of course, the usual spelling in it is with an I-A-N. This one is E-A-N, but it just relates to flowers. Basically.
Okay.
So not a lot to say about his first name. His last name, though, Fortescue. The Harry Potter Wiki speculated on several connections for the last name Fortescue, because apparently there have been a lot of people with the last name Fortescue in like British history. So the first was Sir Adrian Fortescue, who was an advisor to King Henry VIII's court. And Sir Adrian Fortescue was condemned for treason without trial for hostility to Henry VIII's church policies. And I believe he was executed for that.
Okay.
Next up is Hugh Fortescue, an earl whose statue stands at Exeter Castle, where the last three trials and executions of suspected witchcraft took place in England.
That one makes more sense.
That one, yeah, I like that one more. The next is John Fortescue, who wrote all kinds of works on English government and law and was basically like a big muckety-muck with the royals. And one of his books he wrote, I think, specifically to educate Prince Edward of Lancaster. That one is one of the ones that might connect to some stuff with Deathly Hallows that we'll get to. And then the last one is Adrian Fortescue, who is a descendant of Sir Adrian Fortescue. He didn't get a sir, I guess. But
you got to be knighted by the queen.
Yeah. But Adrian Fortescue lived late 19th century into the 20th century. And he was a Renaissance man. He was an English Roman Catholic priest who was an influential liturgist, artist, calligrapher, composer, polyglot, amateur photographer, Byzantine scholar, and adventurer. I'm really curious about what one has to do to get the title adventurer thrown in there. But yeah, so those seemed like the notable Fortescues over time. For the purposes of this chapter, I think the one of the guy who has the statue at Exeter is the best connection mm-hmm. we have. But the one about the John Fortescue will be important, I think, when we get to Deathly Hallows. So Florian Fortescue just seems like a cool dude. I would love to have a guy that gives me free ice cream every half hour.
Every half hour seems like very
often. That's a lot
of ice cream. That's a lot of ice cream for
I mean, maybe they're like kiddie cones, you know, they go down
Sundays. He specifically says a Sunday every half hour.
Okay. Yeah. That'd be a lot of ice cream.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's August. I imagine in my head that Harry is sitting outside of the ice cream parlor, you know, like at little like picnic tables and stuff.
Say that word again. Ice cream. What?
Ice cream parlor.
Parlor.
Don't we know? You know, I can't say ours very well in certain words. I imagine Harry is sitting outside and like doing his homework and it's hot. So, you know, a nice ice cream cone will cool you down.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just it's so much ice cream.
That's a lot of ice cream.
I fully support it, but that's don't try that at home, kids.
No, that would be too much. So Harry is basically just like kind of wandering around wandering around Diagon Alley, shopping, window shopping.
He runs into some friends. Goes around to like actually shopping.
Yeah. And we learn when he goes to the bookstore that he's taking two new subjects this year, Care of Magical Creatures and Divination. For Care of Magical Creatures, that solves one mystery. That is...
Oh, boy. He sees a cage with all those monster books, and they are attacking each other.
Yeah. And the shopkeeper when he goes in to get one of those books. And so
this scared shopkeeper puts on some thick gloves and is about to stick his hands into this like book fight ring.
Yeah. And then Harry's like, oh no, I already have mine. And he's like, oh, you do?
Thank you. I've been bitten 5 times today.
Yeah. So Harry now knows why Hagrid gifted him the Monster Book of Monsters. He was previously afraid that Hagrid was going to conscript him into taking care of some new weird creature that Hagrid has obtained somehow. But turns out it's for Care of Magical Creatures class. And for Divination, we don't quite know yet what divination is all about. We'll learn about it in a future chapter that I'm pretty sure is just called Divination. But he has to buy the book Unfogging the Future by one Cassandra Vablatsky. Surprise, everyone. That's my name. Cassandra Vablatsky. No, my first name is Cassandra, so I do have a special connection here. I still don't fully know how to pronounce my first name, but that's an issue for me and my personal life. But the name Cassandra is a good one for a book called Unfogging the Future. And it's a name that J.K. Rowling is going to reuse for another character later. The name Cassandra comes from Greek mythology. I am not Greek, just to have a Greek name. The name comes from Greek mythology, and Cassandra was the daughter of King Priam and Queen Hecuba. Apollo, the god of, like, there's a list of the things that Apollo is the god of, and it's basically everything. He's the god of archery, music, dance, truth, prophecy, healing, diseases, the sun, light, poetry. He's the protector of the young, and like the list goes on. So Apollo's a big guy, cool god. He falls in love with Cassandra because Cassandra is like a hottie, apparently, and gives her the gift of prophecy.
She's a human?
Yes.
Okay.
However, Cassandra rejects Apollo. She's like, no, I don't want any part of that. And so Apollo does what any normal person would do in that situation and curses her. So he had already given her that gift of prophecy, and he tweaks it so that she can only foretell tragedies, but no one will ever believe her. So it's a good name for the author of a book about telling the future.
Yes, absolutely.
Vablatsky, the last name, comes from Madame Helena Blavatsky. I hope I'm saying that right. Who is a 19th century psychic and founder of the Theosophy movement and early proponent of New Age philosophy. She was declared a fraud in 1885 by the Society of Psychical Research. And she was known for fusing ideas of modern science with esoteric tenets of Eastern spirituality. That was according to the Harry Potter lexicon. That was the wiki. The wiki had that. The lexicon backed it up, though. So we will talk about the name Cassandra again, I think, in a few chapters.
When we get into divination, a little taste of getting you thinking about what divination might be.
Yeah.
Because we do have, Unfogging the Future, but the other books around it are Predicting the Unpredictable, Insulate Yourself Against Shocks and Broken Balls When Fortune Turns Foul.
Broken Balls When Fortune Turns Foul is a genius title. I don't know, like, I don't think you've ever had to like give a legit title to anything, but like I've done some like research writing and publication, and coming up with a title is the worst thing. But some people just have a gift for it, of like taking some puns and putting it in there, and that one I think is
it's very good.
One such example.
Obviously Crystal Balls is what they're talking about there.
When you break your crystal ball.
Yeah. Oh, and there will be some breaking of crystal balls, just not for a while.
I should mention too, divination is like a real term. J.K. Rowling did not make
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So some people might know what it is, but we'll wait till we get to the chapter to talk about
it. And then also near it is Death Omens, What to Do When You Know the Worst is Coming. And Harry gets fixated on this book.
Yeah. I'm going to read again directly from my notes. Harry thinks the dog he saw in Magnolia Crescent was a Grimm, which is an omen of death, because he saw one on the cover of a book.
Yeah.
Harry's critical thinking skills are, I saw a big black dog. It must have been a Grimm. Just because he saw that book in the bookstore.
I mean, you know, you see something that's actually goes along very well with what the assistant says of like, don't read that book. You will think everything is a death omen.
Which I liked a lot. And he says, you'll think everything is a death omen and it's enough to scare you to death.
Yes.
That idea of like, this is going to make you jump at your own shadow. And
like, you're going to lead yourself to death just by thinking everything is going to cause your death.
It's hard to talk about this fully just yet, because this book, like the Grimm and prophecies and the future, are really important throughout this book. I think that the book itself is presenting this ethos of looking into the future and telling prophecies is kind of this fake art. And we kind of just live our lives and they are what they are. And it's in retrospect that we prescribe certain meaning to it, if that makes sense. Like we put all these things together and say like, well, this was fated to happen. And I prophesized this, when really it's just like these things just happen. There's no driving force behind it. It's
like looking back at your horoscope after the day and saying,
yeah,
well, that's why that happened.
Yeah. Or like when you look at your horoscope, if you look at it in the morning and it says like, you're going to have a stinker of a day, everything is going to go wrong. And then things go wrong throughout the day. Maybe it's just because you had a bad attitude that day because you read your horoscope in the paper. And so I think that this book is kind of presenting that ethos early on, and we'll see how it continues to develop.
Yeah. And we know this affected Harry relatively strongly, considering he looked at the cover alone and is horrified and thinks he's going to die.
Yeah. I will say, just because we were talking about school subjects, Harry taking on new school subjects, we do learn later on when Harry meets up with Ron and Hermione that Hermione is also taking some new school subjects.
She's taking all the new school subjects.
She is taking, hold on, I have a list here somewhere.
While you look at that, I'm going to talk about a character from this book that I really enjoyed. They only get like two lines, but they are two lines that make me very happy. And the first one happens right after Harry gets all of his stuff, brings it back, and he looks in the mirror and instinctively starts patting down his messy hair. And his own mirror talks back to him and just says, you're fighting a losing battle there, dear.
Yes. And then when he goes back after seeing the book with the Grimm on it, lays down on the bed and says, I'm not going to be murdered.
That's at the very end of the chapter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where he says, I'm not going to be murdered. And the mirror replies, sleepily, might I add, that's the spirit, dear.
Yes. So I did find the list. Hermione will be taking, in addition to the other classes that we've established over the last 2 years, she is taking arithmancy, care of magical creatures, divination, study of ancient runes, and muggle studies. And Ron is particularly upset about her taking muggle studies because he's like, you're a muggle born. And Hermione says, but it'll be fascinating to learn about muggles from the wizarding perspective. And I agree with Hermione here. I think we're meant to laugh at Hermione here.
No, I fully agree with Hermione of saying that would be so cool to see how the wizards look at everything. Like, imagine seeing their bizarre take on everything.
Yeah.
Like we get a hint of that with Arthur Weasley trying to figure out rubber ducks and telephones.
It's like if you ever have met somebody who has a different accent to yours and you're an annoying person like me and you ask them to. So like we're American. So like if I meet a British person, I'm going to ask them to do an American accent because I'm really curious about what they think American accents sound like. And I think it's a similar thing of like, I want to know how the outside looks into the world that I'm familiar with. So I totally agree with Hermione here. And also, I think part of it might be that Hermione wants to go into that class and correct the teacher about some of these things.
I don't think so.
I would hope that the teacher was familiar with the Muggle world enough that that would not be necessary. But we know how much Hermione likes to be a know-it-all and be a teacher's pet. So I think that some of hers may be motivated by that.
Honestly, I wouldn't say like, yes, she does love knowing everything and she does want to be the teacher's pet. But I wouldn't say the motivation for taking this class was.
I'm not saying it's
so
the primary motivation. Yeah. No, she's not like, oh, I'm going to get an easy A because I'm a Muggle born.
Yeah, Hermione is very much not an easy A type of person.
Yeah, I think she genuinely wants to like learn.
Yeah.
And I admire that about her. So Harry meets up with Ron and Hermione. Hermione is described as looking very brown, which is a big conversation we have to have because a lot of fans have interpreted this a particular way of Hermione is a person of color, let's say. Others have countered that saying maybe she's just tan because it's the summer and she's been vacationing in France.
And this is written in the same line as Ron looking incredibly freckly, which does happen when a very white freckled person like myself goes into the sun.
And so I think that either interpretation is valid. Personally, I am here for black Hermione, brown Hermione, what have you. I think that there's evidence that Rowling envisioned her characters a very certain way, and that certain way is white. And that's a problem for a lot of reasons. But she did say, like, when they cast, like, Dan Radd and Emma Watson and Rupert Grint, like, oh, they're exactly what I thought the characters would look like. And that comes from a flawed author and the lack of diversity in these books. So I'm not weighing in either which way, but I think that it's important to highlight this line and say that it could be used as justification for a black Hermione. And indeed, when a black woman was cast to play Hermione in the Cursed Child stage play, Rowling basically said, like, well, I never said she wasn't black, which is a problematic way of approaching diversity in your book series. But still, I wanted to bring it up.
Yes. And it's something we talked about, I believe, actually, in the previous
episode.
Yeah,
when we mentioned
Sirius. We talked about how few people are mentioned to be a specific race, and it's only when they are black.
Yep. So again, a flawed creator, a deeply, deeply flawed creator wrote these books.
But I would argue that you absolutely can choose anyone's race, except for maybe Ron's.
There are like ginger people of color.
I guess so.
There's a lot of combinations of people out there. All of them beautiful and valid, some more common than others. Definitely when you think of a ginger, we conceive of it as like a very traditionally like white looking person. But, you know, there's a lot of variations out there.
Yeah.
So I'm here for however people want to imagine these characters. I'm not hung up on like, oh, well, on page 300 of this book, it says that Hermione was pale. So I don't care.
And on top of that, some of the fan art I've seen with Hermione being black is amazing.
Yeah, she's like, got big,
I actually
bushy
sent
hair,
you
like...
an adorable picture because we're about to meet a character that shows up by attacking Ron.
Yeah.
Crookshanks is going to be Hermione's new pet, almost like a familiar, such as like how Hedwig is. And I found an adorable picture right on the Harry Potter lexicon that I emailed to Cassie of Hermione holding this big, fluffy cat in her arms.
For the record, that will be Joe's first contribution to the show notes. So I will link it in there, this illustration of Hermione with her cat. And I'll try to find the artist's name, too. Yeah, we'll talk about Crookshanks in a minute. I've got a couple more things. So this is the last day before they go to King's Cross. And the Weasleys are staying at Leaky Cauldron for the night, and then they're going to go to King's Cross all together, and they'll go with Harry too, and Hermione. Hermione explains that her parents dropped her off, basically.
Yeah, with all her stuff.
Did her parents like work this out with the Weasleys, or did they just drop their 13-year-old daughter at the Leaky Cauldron
and there was like, definitely
figure
contact.
It out, kid?
First of all, while we have very, very little exposure to Hermione's parents, I would say someone to raise Hermione the way Hermione is does not think that way.
Yeah, it just we know also, so little about Hermione's family.
But also we know like throughout the previous summers, even if we don't know explicitly for this summer, Hermione is in regular contact with Ron.
In the future. Not these two previous summers. There's not a summer.
The summer before, previous. Like between one and two, there was clear contact between the two of them.
This whole summer, she's been vacationing in France. And I don't think we really had the implication that she had talked to Ron, because remember, we talked about the phone call. And I was like, why wouldn't Ron just tell Hermione, hey, Harry gave me the phone number. Can you call him? Because you know how to use a phone.
But Hermione's letter talks about Ron telling her that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So they are in regular contact.
Maybe they did arrange it.
The Weasleys planned out, oh, well, we'll take Hermione.
Yeah, it's just something I want to pay attention to, because in future books, Hermione's summers are pretty much spent with the Weasleys almost entirely. And it very much seems like her parents are just kind of like, oh, yeah, take her. Like, she's gone for most of the year at wizard boarding school. She sometimes doesn't go home for the holidays. And, like, she spends a lot of the summer with the Weasleys, too. We know so little about her parents.
She spends the last, like, couple weeks most of the time. Usually when...
The summer is only so long.
It's only so long, but still.
Yeah, it's strange to me. And, like, if we had an explanation about her parents, like, oh, they're, like, super busy workaholics, I'm like, oh, okay, that would make sense to me. Or, like, oh, you know, they are in regular contact with their daughter, and they have a close relationship, and they know that she's steeped in this very different world, and they want her to be a part of that. Because there's a lot of characters that get backstory. I'm thinking specifically of McGonagall, who has, like, a big, long backstory that, I don't know, maybe we can dig into at some point if we do, like, a bonus episode or something. I don't know. It's not really relevant to the books, but she has this big long history about like being torn between the muggle and the magical worlds, because her father is a muggle and her mother is a witch who had to hide for much of her life her magical abilities. And McGonagall also like has to straddle those two worlds. And again, I'm not going to get deep into that lore, but I think Hermione is kind of in a similar position where she has these muggle parents, but she's a magical person. And as she gets more and more engrossed in the magical world, she kind of seems to forget about and not spend time in the muggle world.
I would disagree. Like, obviously, they're all spending all of this time away from their families, but she is spending a good chunk of her summers with her family.
This summer, she did like vacation in France with her family for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fine. I'm saying future summers, it becomes a little more.
OK, well, we can talk about that when we get there.
OK, but I'm just tracking
from my memory up until a very specific point, she is spending most of her summer with her parents and then spending the last week or two at the Weasleys.
Okay, we'll see when we get to the future books.
Okay.
Ron got a new wand. We knew that from his message about Egypt, but he does tell us about the wand in this chapter. It is 14 inches, willow, and contains a unicorn tail hair. There is a lot of wand lore about what the different components of a wand suggests about a person. So I have whittled that down to just these elements that Ron mentions, and people feel a lot of ways about this stuff. Okay. So unicorn hair generally produces the most consistent magic and is least subject to fluctuations and blockages. It seems like the most common of the wand cores, from my understanding. Ron's wand is on the upper edge of normal in terms of length. Normal wand lengths tend to be between 9 and 14 inches. So
Ollivander knew how lanky he was going to get.
This does explain this page on the Wizarding World website, I think it was, that short wands typically go to those wizards who are lacking in character in some way. Not necessarily short people, so that they're proportionate. So by extension, Ron having a very long wand, I guess, would suggest that he has a lot of character.
Okay.
That, you know, he's a good dude. He's an upstanding guy. He's got a nice
for that to be like a
wand.
Well-known thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like imagine being 11 years old and you get like a short, stubby little wand.
Like the guy that makes the wands being like, yeah, you got something wrong with your character, kid.
Yeah.
Here, take this like 6-inch wand and get out of my face.
And I think that's part of the reason that people don't care for some of this wand lore stuff that Rowling invented. And then finally, Willow is the wood used for Ron's wand. And Willow is an uncommon wand wood with healing power. The ideal owner of a Willow wand has some insecurities, but the greatest potential.
That sounds like Ron.
It does sound like Ron. It's almost as if she invented this stuff after she wrote that Ron had a Willow wand.
Has healing potential, though.
Yeah, that one, from my knowledge of Ron, never becomes relevant, but...
Well, potential doesn't mean that it actually happens.
Yes. So that's Ron's wand. And now we can talk about Crookshanks, which I know is what you've been looking forward to this whole time.
You know I like cats.
Hermione's parents give her a little bit of extra money for her birthday, for her to like treat herself to something nice. They give her 10 galleons, which once again, I converted for us so that we can figure this out. That is $68.30 in US dollars. It is 50 pounds or 55 euros. About.
Okay.
Seems like a lot of money for a 13th birthday. I don't know. I was poor, so I don't know what like normal birthday gifts cost.
68 bucks?
Yeah. That seems like a lot to spend on a 13-year-old.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, her parents are dentists.
Yeah.
So she's got money.
Yeah. She is upper class, let's say. This reminds me, though, that I should Google Hermione's birthday because Hermione's
early
birthday
September.
Is September 19th. And I mean, I guess we could also rationalize that, like, she's spending the night in London. So they might want to be like, OK, you know, if you get dinner, you know, you want a little bit of money for that. Mm-hmm. We don't know how much Crookshanks cost her because that is what she gets for herself as a birthday treat.
We know it's less than 10 galleons, though, because while she's alone in the store because Ron and Harry leave, we'll talk about that in a second, mm-hmm. but Ron leaves behind his rat tonic, mm-hmm. which Hermione also buys for him.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask how much like animals cost. And so maybe we should set the stage for what happens here. Hermione says, I've got a little bit of extra money for my birthday, and I think I want an owl. Just, you know, Harry has Hedwig and Ron, you've got Errol, which Ron objects to. He's like, I don't have Errol. Like, Errol is the old decrepit delivery owl shared by my entire family. And Hermione's like, whatever, I want to get an owl. And Scabbers apparently has been looking a little feeble.
Very feeble.
Yeah. And so they're like, okay, let's go to the magical creature store and Hermione can look for an owl and maybe Ron, you can get Scabbers looked at and see if there's something that could help him out.
And when Scabbers is looked at, like, we know that at the very least, Percy was Scabbers' previous owner.
Yes.
This is assuming that Ron got him for his first year of Hogwarts. This is starting his third year with Scabbers, and we're told that like rats like him aren't supposed to live more than 3 years, like 3 years at most.
Yeah. And so if Percy, by extension, got Scabbers like for his first year at Hogwarts, Scabbers is at least 6 years old.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. There's more description of Scabbers that if you have that page open, we might as well read.
Found it. Bang him on the counter.
Yeah, that's what the shopkeeper says.
Oh, yeah, it does start with bang him on the counter. As Ron's asking about his rat, Scabbers, Ron lifts Scabbers out of his pocket. Like nearly everything Ron owned, Scabbers the rat was secondhand. He had once belonged to Ron's brother Percy and a bit battered. Next to the glossy rats, he looked especially woebegone.
Yes. And then the shopkeeper kind of evaluates Scabbers and remarks like this rat shit should not be alive. Basically, he doesn't have any magical powers. He's missing a toe and he just looks like garbage.
Yeah.
And he tries to sell Ron a new rat, too, which I enjoyed.
That was very good. Of like, you want to just upgrade?
Yes. And so Ron is just like, no, I'm not interested. They're show offs. And so the shopkeeper is like, oh, well, you can try this tonic. And before Ron can pay for the tonic, something happens.
Yeah. Crookshanks jumps onto Ron's head and lunges at Scabbers. Scabbers runs out of the shop and Ron and Harry take off after him.
We should mention Crookshanks is a cat.
Crookshanks is a cat. And according to the Harry Potter lexicon, which claims, according to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Crookshanks is part cat, part Kneasel.
I believe we will run into Kneasels in Goblet of Fire.
You may be right. We'll talk about them a little bit more when we get to them. But for now, Kneasels are a small cat-like creature with flecked, speckled, or spotted fur outside its ears and a tail like a lion's. Kneasel is intelligent, independent, and occasionally aggressive. Though if it takes a liking to a witch or wizard, it makes an exceptional pet. The Kneasel has an uncanny ability to detect unsavory or suspicious characters and can be relied upon to guide its owner safely home if they are lost. So we'll see if that comes into play.
Yes. And so let's circle back to my question about how much animals cost. It does seem like Hermione may have gotten a discount on Crookshanks because Crookshanks is a fully grown cat. And the shopkeeper kind of says, like, nobody really wants Crookshanks.
Yeah, he's been there for years. Yeah. Nobody has bought him.
So, like, how much does it cost to adopt an animal?
It varies drastically. To, like, buy an animal off of, like, a breeder could be hundreds of dollars.
Okay. What about, like, adopt?
Like, rescue an animal from a shelter. That also varies drastically because it's not free. It's never free. But sometimes people will donate to an animal shelter to cover the costs of it.
Okay, so it varies. So, yeah, so does it seem like Hermione could have gotten her cat for $68 or less?
I think that's like totally possible, especially considering the economy of the Wizarding World of like wands are what, 7 galleons?
And unicorn hair is
10,
11.
Yeah, so 10 galleons might be enough for a cat. I don't know how much. How much Hedwig was.
It was a gift from Hagrid, so.
Yeah, but like, I don't know if Hagrid's swimming in gold.
I mean, he lives on a Hogwarts property. I don't think he's paying rent. And like, presumably he's not just being paid room and board.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, truly, who knows? He also likes to drink and gamble.
He spends plenty of time at the Hogshead. So.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Hermione gets a cat. Also, this is the 90s, so like the economy was different. I did convert 10 galleons into 2021 dollars, so maybe that's my fault. So the name Crookshanks may refer to the cat being bow-legged. It's mentioned, I believe, in the chapter that Crookshanks is bow-legged. A crook is a bend and a shank is the lower part of a leg. And there is a Scottish surname, Crookshank, spelled differently, which means crooked legs. So that's kind of what the name came from.
Yeah, the Crookshanks is described as having crooked legs. So that works out perfectly.
I want to ask, did Hermione become a cat person after the events of last year? Specifically taking the polyjuice potion and turning into a cat person.
I don't think that would be explicitly what turned her into someone who liked cats. In fact, it's impressive that she was willing to get a cat after that traumatic event of having a tail of her own.
Or maybe she was like, you know, cats, not half bad.
I don't want to think about the like other potential direction that could go in. So,
yeah, just a thought. You know, Hermione never expressed interest in cats before.
I mean, she certainly didn't go into that store looking for a cat either.
No, she just like fell in love with Crookshanks, I guess.
Yeah, so it might have been something about Crookshanks. It might have been just watching Crookshanks
scalp like, Ron.
Attack Ron, which is always fun. And she could have felt very sympathetic seeing that Crookshank was unwanted and needed a home.
Yeah. So she picks up Crookshanks. J.K. Rowling apparently made some comments about Crookshanks. This is listed on the Harry Potter lexicon. I can't find a source for it, like an interview or something that it goes back to. I do trust the Harry Potter lexicon generally, so I think that it's fine. But so Rowling said, when I was working in London in the late 1980s, I used to eat my lunch in a nearby square on sunny days. And a large, fluffy ginger cat that looked as though it had run face first into a wall used to prowl around the sunbathers there. I assume it lived in a nearby house. I didn't ever get close enough to give myself an asthma attack, but I became distantly fond of this cat, which prowled among the humans around it, looking disdainful and refusing to be stroked. When I decided to give Hermione an unusually intelligent cat, I gave him the appearance of this haughty animal with the slightly unfair addition of bandy legs. So that's Crookshanks. And Crookshanks, maybe will be an important character in this book.
Maybe. Maybe the new pet does something.
Yes. I did make a note about this because I thought about it for the first time. Every student at Hogwarts is allowed to bring a pet. It could be an owl, a cat, a toad, and a rat, I guess.
I mean, pretty much anything that was in there.
Yeah.
I feel like bats was talked about in the first book as well.
Hogwarts must be a zoo. If every child is like, imagine if every kid brought a cat with them.
I mean, every child is allowed to. That does not mean they do.
I know. I just it occurred to me there must be a lot of cats at Hogwarts.
They have an owl place specifically.
Like, I don't think also. But Hermione says that Crookshanks is going to stay in the girls' dorm because because Ron is concerned about it. So she's like, "Oh, Crookshanks will be in the dorm with me. It's not a problem." So, like, while Hedwig goes to the owlery, I don't think there's like a cat cafe in Hogwarts for them.
That would be pretty nice. but if you think about, like, it seems to be five to a dorm room for the most part.
Yeah, I guess.
So at most five cats.
I mean, it's this overarching problem too, where there are too few students at Hogwarts.
Maybe it's controlled so that they don't have too many animals.
I don't think that's
no, it's not.
The case. Yes. So Hermione gets Crookshanks, and Crookshanks and Scabbers do not seem to like each other.
This is going to be a very animal centric book. And that was something that I really didn't remember until this chapter.
I love to think of this as an animal centric book. Oh boy. Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. So they head back to the Leaky Cauldron, where the rest of the Weasleys are. Percy has been crowned head boy and apparently is speaking like an elected official now and saying like good chap. Honestly, he's talking like Gatsby in The Great Gatsby. He's like, oh, fantastic to see you. Let's shake hands.
And then Fred and George, of course, have to make fun of him for trying to be very proper with Harry.
Yeah.
And Fred jumps in and says, simply splendid to see you, old boy. And George goes, marvelous. Absolutely spiffing. Followed by Mrs. Weasley telling them to knock it off. And Fred hops over to say, how really corking to see you.
Yes. And then later they bewitch his head boy badge to say big head boy.
Yes.
Which is, I think, about the level of like wittiness that, what are they, 14 year old boy would think of.
Are they only 1 year older?
No, I think they're 15.
They're
15. Yeah. 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 I enjoyed that.
But they also talk about trying to shut Percy in the pyramid.
Yeah.
And the only reason he's not still in Egypt inside a pyramid right now is because Mom saw them do it.
I really start to question whether Fred and George are
mean.
It seems like, yeah, it seems like they're kind of bullies.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
It seems like they're really mean to Percy.
They certainly like playing pranks, but it's like they're messing with an older sibling. Like, yes, it could still be looked at as bullying, but in that direction, it seems less.
You can be bullied by anyone.
You absolutely
younger
can.
Than
yes,
you.
I know. But like, it's more of just being annoyed by a younger sibling,
I guess. And I think that the implication, too, with the book is that Percy is annoying. So Fred and George are like trying to keep him in check.
It seems like a Jim and Dwight situation.
Yeah, but like modernly, a lot of think pieces have come out of like, is Jim Halpert a bully?
Yes.
Because like as the series goes on,
they do
they
address
downplay
it too.
Dwight, you know, they kind of woobify him. And, you know, at first he was like a literal Nazi and like doing genuinely really annoying things at the office. And so you kind of rooted for Jim. But as the series goes on and they want Dwight to be like an actual character and somebody that you sympathize with, Jim continuously playing pranks on him is like, okay, buddy, like, first of all, this is a workplace. And secondly, like, you're being mean. Like, this guy's just trying to be him, you know?
Yeah, Absolutely. I don't know if this is appropriate for the podcast, though.
That's fine. Okay. Everybody watches The Office, Joe.
Okay. Potentially not, though. I don't know. It's my fault for bringing it up, I suppose.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I guess maybe also because I'm an adult now. So, like, as a kid, I was like, yeah, Friend and George are the best. They're so funny. But, like, now that I'm old and wise and grumpy, maybe I'm like, this seems mean. You should be nice to your brother.
Do you identify too strongly with Percy now?
No, I was a bully.
Okay.
Becca and I bullied Den for, like, several years. And I mean, there were interesting sibling dynamics at points too. I was certainly made fun of and hurt at times.
Yeah, I mean, siblings mess with each other a lot.
Yeah, but there was a stretch of time when me and Becca kind of teamed up. Yeah, I don't know.
So they're getting cars from the ministry to take them to.
That was a great segue.
I'm just ignoring what you're saying, and hopefully you'll cut it out and make it work. So they're getting cars from the ministry to take them to King's Cross Station tomorrow.
The Weasleys, that is. They ask, how are we getting to King's Cross? And Mr. Weasley says, oh, well, the ministry's given us some cars that we'll drive over and they'll fit all of us somehow.
Cars, plural.
Yes.
Seven Weasleys and Harry and Hermione.
Right. Well.
And all their stuff.
Ginny, Ron, Percy, Fred, George, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley. Okay, yeah, seven.
Are you questioning me? Because I took it directly from the chapter.
There are seven Weasley children.
Yes, but then.
Then I was like, oh, wait, Bill, Charlie.
Subtract two siblings, add two parents.
Okay, you know I majored in English.
I will say for the listeners at home, Cassie counted on her fingers.
Yeah,
just
what's
to
wrong
really
with that?
Emphasize the. Yeah.
Yes. So the ministry is sending cars for them to get from the Leaky Cauldron to King's Cross. They all have dinner. And then Harry overhears a conversation. He overhears a few conversations. I'm going to skip to the important one.
You don't want to talk about how Percy and Ron both lost something. Ron actually lost something. He left his rat tonic on the floor, which leads Harry to go downstairs. And then Percy lost his head badge.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about the head boy badge. Yeah. Fred and George took it. And that's the other thing, too. Fred and George just kind of sit there and watch Percy get all mad at Ron, saying like, oh, the room's so messy. I can't find my head boy badge and it's your fault. And Percy and Ron are like in this argument and Fred and George are just watching.
Well, they're listening. Their door's not open or anything.
It still seems mean. Like, that's mean to Ron, who's done nothing wrong.
Okay. So Harry goes and he stops at, I guess, like this one of the steps where he's not yet visible because he hears Mr. and Mrs. Weasley talking about Sirius Black.
Yes. And they are in a bit of a disagreement because Mr. Weasley seems to want to tell Harry something about Sirius Black. And Mrs. Weasley is saying like, no, he's better off not knowing. He's happy. This is just going to scare him. But Mr. Weasley wants to tell Harry that Sirius Black has been muttering about Harry in his jail cell. And presumably this is the assumption that Mr. Weasley presents to us, which we believe because Mr. Weasley works for the ministry and apparently everyone in the ministry has been redirected to just focusing on finding Sirius Black. Mm-hmm. He says that Sirius Black wants to find Harry and kill him to somehow allow Voldemort to return.
Yeah, I suppose there could be logic behind that idea of like kill Harry and Voldemort comes back.
Well, there's like, remember back in the first book, Hagrid, when he tells Harry about like what happened with Voldemort and him killing his parents, Hagrid is like, some people say he died that night. I don't believe it. So there's already this belief that like Voldemort's still out there somehow.
Well, yes,
and that's
obviously
that's been strengthened at the very least after what happened in Philosopher's Stone and then after Chamber of Secrets, although I don't think the details of that are as well known. So presumably somebody like Sirius, who is Voldemort's like right hand guy, would know there's a way for my dude to come back. But Harry Potter has defeated him twice now. So I got to get rid of Harry Potter.
Yeah, like the logic, I suppose, makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, Black apparently was heard muttering in his sleep for weeks, he's at Hogwarts. So we're not going to get into the guards until next chapter.
No, but I do think it's interesting that Mr. Weasley seems afraid of the Azkaban guards.
And Albus Dumbledore does not want, like, he is not fond of them.
He is reluctant to allow them to be at Hogwarts. He does ultimately let them go. But now we know that Fudge, Mr. Weasley, and Dumbledore all feel some type of way about the Azkaban guards, which I think is, like, really good buildup for what they eventually become.
But, like, we'll have to look back at this next chapter. Specifically, the guards told Fudge that Black had been talking in his sleep.
The Dementors can communicate with like, their controllers. That's something that happens.
But, like, psychically? Like, what's happening?
I don't know. I don't know.
This, yeah, we're going to go back to that. The fact that they can talk, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I believe it, but the logistics.
yeah. Another good thing that we figure out from this conversation is why Fudge was acting so weird in the last chapter, that he was so relieved to find Harry alive that he cut Harry all this kind of slack. And this is also why Fudge was like, stay in Diagon Alley. I'm going to have Tom keep an eye out for you. We need to protect you, basically. And Harry kind of read it as weird at the time, but we've got an explanation for why now.
Yes, we just have a clearer picture.
And I don't think that Harry ultimately hears where Mr. and Mrs. Weasley end up. Oh, no, I think Mrs. Weasley concedes. Like, I think she says, like, okay, you're right. He has to know, like, do what you think is right.
Well, I think Mrs. Weasley makes her point and says, like, okay, it is up to you. Like, this is your job. It's up to you.
Yeah. Which I thought just, like, this was a very, like, good and controlled conversation between married people. And
it maybe was apparently a strong argument, though, for a while.
But, like, I think that they kind of ended it well. You know, Mrs. Weasley said, I made my peace, but, you know, this is kind of your deal. This is your business. And so I hope you'll listen to me, but I also trust you to make the best decision. Yeah, I don't know. That's just something that I pick up on, I think, because I don't have a lot of good experience with how married people talk to each other. So it's always nice when I see, like, oh, look, they diffused to that argument in, like, a healthy way.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, another example of how the Weasleys are
the best.
Yeah.
Greatest. Yeah. And that's kind of how the chapter ends. That's when Harry goes back up to his room and says, I'm not going to be murdered.
That's the spirit, dear.
Yes. So that brings us to spell of the week.
Before we get into that, I'm so sorry. He goes up to his room and they emphasize that Harry is not worried about anything other than
oh my god,
I can't go to Hogsmeade. There's no chance I can go to Hogsmeade now.
And to be fair, he did just rationalize, like, I think that the Weasleys were correct. Like, there's no safer place than Hogwarts because Dumbledore is there. But it still is very petty.
Now I can't go to Hogsmeade on the weekend.
Nobody's going to sign my permission slip because Sirius Black is after me and wants to murder me and I don't get to go to the candy store.
Spoilers there. There is a candy store in Hogsmeade.
That's not a spoiler. like, I get it. He's 13, but wow.
This kid has faced death plenty of times.
Child abuse, like, and he's still throwing a little.
He is hardened to everything except for not being allowed to hang out with his friends.
And I think it is true to the true, not to the character necessarily, but to the age, you know, like,
I would say it's true to both.
Hung up on stupid, like, things.
I don't think Harry is very frequently worried for his own life.
It's like people who, when they talk about how the pandemic has affected their lives, say, like, oh, I didn't get to go on vacation. It's like, okay, but, like, there are people out there who have lost their jobs and are struggling to meet rent and pay their bills and struggling with social isolation, and you didn't get to go on your vacation. And I never like that comeback of, like, there are kids starving in Africa, but it's like, your problems are real to you. Like, it's not a suffering contest or anything, but, like, I think Harry needs just a touch of perspective here of, like, people are trying to protect me.
Yes.
And if I don't get to go to the Little Wizard Village it's not the end of the world.
But it's going to be so cool.
Yeah, it's just...
I'm going to go to the bar.
Life is hard,
drink some butter beer.
You'd think he would be used to being disappointed at this point.
Oh, he's very used to being disappointed.
Like, you think he'd be used to good things not
happening. But this is the place where he gets to escape. He gets to go away from that horrible disappointment he lived with for 10 years and then escaped briefly and has to go back to every summer. This is one of the few places where he's like safe and he's treated well.
And I think that you can make an argument here of Harry as an other, that Harry is othered in a lot of ways, partly just from coming from a Muggle family and a Muggle upbringing. He's not a part of this world. He has to learn to be a part of it and like earn a place within it. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, he's also kind of othered by his fame. And this becomes important as the books continue and his fame becomes kind of a rift between certain characters. I won't go too far into it, but.
And he was certainly othered last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But like this thing of like we conceive of fame as something like so enviable that like a lot of people like want to be famous. But a lot of people who are famous have come out and said like, no, it's not that easy. Like I can't do normal people things. And Harry doesn't get to do those normal people things because he's in mortal danger, apparently. But like, it's also like, you know, he can't really walk around in Diagon Alley without people recognizing him. And sometimes that's good because he gets free ice cream. But other times it's like, oh, well, you know, my fame comes with caveats.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's interesting to see that, you know, continue for the character throughout the books. He is being a little whiny brat though at the end here.
Yes, but it is nice to like see that perspective of like, yeah, he's a kid.
Yeah.
He's going to be hyper fixated on the tangible thing of like, I'm not going to get to hang out with my friends. It's not about, well, there's this guy who wants to kill me. It's, but like Ron and Hermione, they're going to be.
And I mean, on the flip side, if he had just been like, oh, no, I can't go to Hogwarts. Like, this is the best decision for me. The adults are right here to keep me from going to Hogsmeade because I would be in danger. Like, that would not be true to the character.
No, I mean, like, one of Arthur's main arguments for telling Harry is he's irresponsible. Him and Ron have ended up in the Forbidden Forest twice.
Yeah.
He has to be aware so that he can make smart decisions. And you know he's not going to do that. And this is a good test of like, he's not going to do that. He's not focused. His worry's not in the right place.
Who do you think is right in this argument? Mr. or Mrs. Weasley, if anyone.
Okay, if we're going to take sides.
I mean, you don't have to.
But we can. So okay. I would... like, for Harry specifically, I would argue for telling him, making sure he knows. And honestly, for the argument of he's going to get himself into trouble and he always does, knowing at least will put him on his toes rather than like blissfully saying, I mean, it's tough knowing what's going to happen later on in the book, but I would rather him be aware and hope he makes better decisions because he's going to make poor decisions without being aware also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree with that. In terms of ethics, I tend to follow like the Kantian model. I like the categorical imperative a lot, which boiled down to its very basics is just like, it's kind of the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have done unto you. And Kant specifically was really critical of lying because he says like you're doing that person a disservice by not giving them the full truth.
Okay.
And lying to them basically disrespects them, and it's saying like you are saying that you know better than this person, like you know what they should and should not know. Like people should be able to operate with full knowledge of everything. And critics of that have basically said like, well, that's good for like big lies and everything, that lies are generally disrespecting. But if, you know, there are white lies out there that can make people feel better if you just lie. The one that I always go back to is like, if somebody asks you, do I smell? If they're in a situation where they can change whether or not they smell. Like if you're at home and you're going out in an hour and somebody's like, hey, do I smell? Say yes if they smell, because they can hop in the shower, put on some deodorant, whatever. If you're out, if you're in the middle of a social engagement and somebody asks, hey, do I smell? And they have no way to rectify the smelling, say no. Because otherwise they're going to sit there the whole night and be like, I stink. And they're not going to enjoy their night. And so I think that Mrs. Weasley's argument is in a way saying, like, lie to him because it's only going to hurt him. It's just going to make him feel bad. You know, he's just going to be scared by this. I think that there is a defensible ethical position behind that. I do ultimately think that Arthur is right, that like he should know what's out there so that he can be ready, so that he can be prepared.
But yeah, I do understand that, like, you know, let him enjoy his school year.
Yeah.
With the mindset of, you know, if he's at Hogwarts, he should be safe.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
And I think that it speaks to Mrs. Weasley as a character, because there's also an ethical model called feminist ethics, which are tied to like the ethics of care. And feminist ethics tend to reject a lot of the previous ethical models, which are traditionally masculine and have all these rules and everything. And feminist ethics tend to focus more on intuition and caring and like what is going to make people feel best and enjoy their life the most. And so Mrs. Weasley, coming from that perspective, I think fits her as this motherly character, that like that is her character trait. She is a mother. Mm-hmm. And if maybe she's flawed in some of her ethical judgments, I think that it ultimately comes from a place of caring, of like, I just want him to be happy. I just want him to feel normal. And I
would
respect
also argue
that
it's her faith in Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, I think so too, because she does bring that up. She's like, he doesn't have anything to worry about, Arthur. Like, he's at Hogwarts. He's safe. He's with Dumbledore. And Arthur doesn't say no to that.
Yeah.
Arthur's like, that is true, but he manages to get himself into trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting exchange. And it gives us maybe some insight into characters that don't get as fleshed out as I would like them to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing our spell of the week is short, because, man, we stretched that out.
I'm genuinely interested in these conversations.
No, I know.
I took an entire college class about this. And by which I mean,
I'm not saying we're stretching.
I took a Harry Potter philosophy class.
She's been prepping for this for years.
I was named prefect and head girl, for the record.
And you tried to say that you don't identify with Percy?
I hope I don't identify with Percy. Okay. Spell of the week.
And we're not going to be talking about a spell. We're going to be talking about a potion. We're going to talk about rat tonic.
Oh, boy.
It's a very exciting potion. It's really not. It's a healing potion for rats. It's specifically used to treat aging rats, which, man, it looks like Scabbers is an aging rat.
He do be old.
He do be old. It's sold in a small red bottle at Magical Menagerie in Diagon Alley, which of course is where Ron went to get it. It has an interesting effect. Apparently, if a rat takes too much of it, if it over-engorges, it gets big.
I was going to say that as a joke.
Yeah, it gets big. And I picked this out especially because I thought you would like this, Cassie.
I do like when things get big.
No, the reason we know that it gets big is from one of the Harry Potter video games. Hold on. I think it was,
I would assume, Prisoner of Azkaban.
The Game Boy Advance Prisoner of Azkaban.
Ooh,
game.
I
know you love
it.
The Game Boy Advance Harry Potter games. So
I love the Game Boy Color Harry Potter games. I don't think I've ever played the Game Boy Advance ones.
Oh, okay. Well, if you do that, you can fight.
I really want to play all of them on all the platforms.
You can fight a rat who has drank too much tonic and become a big rat.
Yeah, that's the stuff I like. Yeah. That's why I love the game so much, that they lean so hard into the like weird, whimsical stuff of the wizarding world. I love it. Listeners, if you'd be interested in watching me play all of the Harry Potter games, please let me know, because I would love to have like a reason to be doing that and not just I'm a big loser.
You're going to have to save that Twitch account handle.
Okay, I'll do that.
By the time you're hearing this, folks, we'll have an account. Oh, I don't think Cassie will be playing it yet.
We also have an empty Instagram account just because I was like, gotta might hold as well the save name. That username. Yep. So
before
that's Rat
Tonic.
Big
and famous.
Yep.
That is Rat Tonic.
Nice.
We'll never see it again.
Well, we'll see it in this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that is Spell of the Week. Friends, we don't have any emails to reply to this week, which is understandable.
For the record, as we're recording this, we still haven't put out the first episode of this book.
Yes. So I'm not blaming anyone. I'm not pointing any fingers. I'm not trying to guilt you into it. I'm just saying.
It really sounds like you're trying to guilt them into it.
It would put a smile on my little face every time I see new email for owlpost.patriviastotalis.com. Honestly, I love getting emails just in general. Not specifically for my podcast, but if
that's why she signs up for so many newsletters and any kind of spam.
Yep. Love it. Give it to me. Yes. So if you would like to put a smile on my face, send an email to owlpost@patrivicustotalis.com. That's owlpost@patrivicustotalis.com.
I feel like you're spelling the wrong part of that every time.
Podtrivicus Totalis, it says it on the podcast app. You can figure that one out. All right.
I think you can spell owl post, though.
I just, you know, I slur sometimes. My accent is not the clearest. I don't have that Midwestern newscaster accent that people want.
All right.
I couldn't say parlor.
Yeah.
Parlor.
Parlor.
The ice cream parlor.
That first time.
If I say just the word parlor, I say it right. If I say ice cream parlor...
Oh, boy. It's so, like, you can really hear it.
I'm sorry, friends. Send me an email to owlpost.patrificustotalis.com criticizing my pronunciation. We've gotten lots of those already. I love it. Keep it coming. Corrections.
Literally any excuse to send an email.
Comments, questions. If you just want to say hi, send us an email. You know, it's tough times. We're social distancing. We don't have a ton of human contact. Send us a little email. You know, get in touch with the people that you listen to on a regular basis. Yes. So we don't have any emails.
And on that note, you can meet us.
No.
You can catch us next time.
No, there's other things.
Okay.
You can review us if you think that we're great.
Give me the thing. I can do this faster.
No, you review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, whatever. There are a lot of places to review podcasts. I'd love it. If you did that, you can subscribe to our podcast anywhere that you find podcasts, your favorite podcast app. There's a subscribe button on our website. You can click on that. And on that note, our website does have detailed show notes and all of our episodes that you can listen to and play and find. They're on there.
You can look at that cute cat pic I found.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That'll be in there. That'll be in the show notes.
You can also just search Crookshanks on the Harry Potter lexicon, I think.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's where I got it.
Okay.
It's good, though.
It was on the lexicon. And on that note, to finish this off, you can join us next week for Chapter 5.
The Dementor.